If David Simpson had been Jerry Maguire and showed Leon the true money, it would have hit him over the head like the proverbial ton of bricks. Gold bricks, that is. Let David Simpson show you the true money every Wednesday at noon Central, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
All right, Jacob the Wonder Boy, what do you say we get this thing on the road? By the way, I'm working on the contact number. Don't worry. I think we'll have our interview today. My sweet Sandy will bail me out. I feel it. Hello, everyone. I am talking to myself, as you can tell. I am David Simpson, host of the True Money Show here on the Crusade Channel. King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. I'm here with Jacob the Wonder Boy. We are diligently working to keep the Crusade alive while Micah's Churches is, you know, he's abandoned us. He's left the Crusade. He quit. It's dark in here. He turned the lights off. He left. I don't know where he went. Now, actually, I do kind of know where he is, but I don't know. Should I tell you guys? Why didn't you listen to Mike's show this morning? You'd have found out. Did he do a show this morning or was it just yesterday? Yeah, he did a show yesterday, right? Oh, well, see, I'm all way behind the times here. Well, Mike Church is off doing a special guest appearance at what's called the Argument of the Month Club. You can probably look that up on YouTube. There's a few out there posted, I believe. Some interesting stuff out there. And, of course, it's just Mike ever broadening, ever increasing the reach of the Crusade channel. So we got to thank him for that. Let me tell you what I got going on the True Money Show today. You know, I haven't had guests in a while. I kind of just, well, I lost my scheduler. Got to where I was just doing a lot of my own financial talk. And I know I'm better with guests than without because I'm not a radio guy. I am a financial guy, recovering attorney, financial guy who Mike has waylaid into the radio business. And so I prefer having guests because I think I do a better job asking questions than answering them. Anyway, who knows? I don't know. Call in. Let me know what you think. Let me tell you what's going to be on the show here. If you'd like to call in, I guess I ought to tell you the number. 844-527-8723 is how you can call in. You can also email me at david@tffco.com. We're going to be talking charity today. Yes, charitable giving, something that should be on everyone's list. I'm sure it is, at least the Crusaders. You guys are more than generous. Can't even describe the generosity that comes from all the Crusaders we have out there. So you guys will know what I'm talking about. But to help me along with the talk on charitable giving, I've got a guest today. Mr. Michael Hitchburn will join us at the bottom of the hour to, he's been on Mike's show quite a bit. I think he does a regular weekly segment with Mike these days. He's with the Lepanto Institute. You can check them out online. Just type in Lepanto Institute and you'll find it. And anyway, Michael's going to come on. I was tooling around the internet one day, went to his website just for fun, and saw that they had this whole charitable organization discriminator, meaning what are good charities, what are bad charities, which, by the way, is my financial question of the day. But anyway, I was so struck by the insight that was available from Michael on the Lepanto Institute website that I said, hey, will you come on the show and talk about it a little bit? And he said, you betcha. So we'll have Michael on later on in the show. Since I mentioned a financial question today, I guess I'll pose it. Not that anyone ever calls in to answer my question, but I'll pose the question anyway. How do you tell a good charity from a bad one? And is it even necessary to do so? What do you think? 844-527-8723 is how you can call in. You can email me, david@tffco.com. So, by the way, let me tell Sandy thanks. She got me a number, and we're going to hope this is the right one. Okay, so let's see. Oh, how do you tell a good charity from a bad one, and is it even necessary to do so? Here's some other things I got on the show today. Are you sick of national days of whatever? You know, national, I don't know, spank your baby month. No, they'd never have that one. That's evil. All right, how about national wash your car day or something or whatever? Are you sick of these things? I have to admit, I kind of am. But anyway, I just happened to notice that there's a National Financial Planning Day. It just passed, as a matter of fact. We're going to talk about that a little bit, kind of from a little bit of a joking perspective, but we'll see. We'll delve into it a little bit. I promised to talk about this a show or two ago, why rich people may want to take Social Security at age 62. Well, I got to tell you guys, you know, I'm not sure it's just reserved to rich people need to consider this issue. But we're going to talk about an article I found on that very topic, and I was so appreciative of the guy writing the article and discussing some of those unintended consequences because, quite frankly, I think there's a lot of bad information being given on that topic. And this guy does not give bad info. He gives some pretty good info, all supported, by the way, with data. What do you know? I've got a financial thought of the day from, from Gilbert Keith Chesterton. Mr. GKC is going to ring in today again with our financial thought of the day. And what do you know? It's going to be on charity, the very topic of the show today. And then I'm going to cover, is silver becoming a buy, maybe even the buy of a lifetime? I'm going to have Franklin Sanders on the show in a couple of weeks, and he's my gold bug. He will tell us all about this. I'm just going to wet your whistle today. I'm going to whet your appetite with whether the metals are finally, is it finally time to buy them? Well, this is not from Franklin. I've got an article from Seeking Alpha. It's even entitled, Silver, a Once-in-a-Lifetime Opportunity? Well, let's find out what they have to say about that in a few minutes, too. So I've got my, financial weather report to do here. But before I get to the financial weather report, let's do the financial question of the day. So what is the financial question today? Well, I already told you, but I'm going to go through it one more time and tell you how to call in once more. How do you tell a good charity from a bad one, and is it even necessary? I'm going to pose that question to Michael Hitchburn when he comes on, and we're going to find out what he has to say. But let's go ahead and jump on into that financial weather report. Everybody sing along now.
Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me.
Well, Margie went off in there and hurry and hurry and hurry and hurry. All right, thank you, Hee-Haw Gang. Let me get your little booties out of here. All right, so the financial weather report, well, what do you know? You know, I tell you what, I'm not sure if it's just the financial weather report that causes this problem or if it's just I'm always going to have a problem when I go to get the numbers from the market. I mean, my goodness gracious. I click on a button and my whole computer screen goes white. Well, finally got it back up, guys. Here you go. Yes, you've been waiting for it. I've been waiting for it. I'm not sure it's exactly over yet, but boy, the markets took a wallop today. Now, put that in perspective, they are at all-time highs, so don't, you know, run off and jump off a bridge just yet. But anyway, here you go. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down $831.83. That is a rather substantial 3.15% drop in a single day. Following suit, the S&P 500 down $94.66, sitting at a still rather lofty $2,785.68, but it's down 3.29% today. So listen, if you go open up your account values today, and Jacob, by the way, you might want to try that number just to see, do a little pretest on that number and see if it works. So, you know, what's that? Okay, good. If you open your account, today, you're going to be down 3%, 4%, 5%. I mean, it's going to happen, guys. So don't go crying. If nothing else, this might be the time where you say, "Do I need to do some reallocations and rebalancing?" Now, today might be the wrong day to do that since you've already lost. But anyway, you never know if it's coming back or going to continue on down. That's the funny part about finances. So, or not so funny part is you just go to pull the trigger. You go, but should I, or is it no, maybe? Could I stand still? Should I go forward? Should I go backwards? There never is a good answer to the question, by the way. No matter what some financial expert will tell you, there isn't a good answer to the question. I will just tell you that David Simpson over here at Fiscal Fitness Company, we rebalance our portfolios every month, a certain segment of the book of business, and all of them will get certain components of their portfolios sold every first week of the month because I get a report that I review at that moment and decide on buy, selling, holding on all of my clients' holdings. So I do it on a monthly basis. You might consider doing it less regularly if you're doing it on your own, maybe quarterly or biannually. But you do need to pay attention to your holdings and make sure that you are selling things high and buying things low and rebalancing periodically. Okay, the Russell 2500, these are small and mid caps. By the way, they didn't drop as much. But you know why? Because they've already been hit pretty hard earlier in the year. But they're down $17.50 or negative 2.75%, sitting at $618.16. Just like the mids and small caps, the EFA index, the foreign developed markets, they've been hitting, both them and the emerging markets have been hit pretty hard already. So they're not dropping as much as the domestic markets. But anyway, the EFA index, EFA is a symbol, it's down $1.41 or 2.14%. And then finally, on the equities, we're going to look at the emerging markets. This is an ETF. The symbol is Echo Echo Mike. It's down $1.21 or 2.97%. So everything is down between 2.5% and 3.5% across the board. And oddly enough, you know, sometimes bonds go the opposite direction. Looking at the bond index here, it's AG, A-G-G is a symbol. It's down 2 cents or 0.02%. So bonds are holding, but sometimes you expect bonds to actually go up when these equities start getting slaughtered like they are. So anyway, there you go. There's the stock market. And let's go ahead and close up that old financial weather report before I give you a little silver report.
Deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me.
Yeah, the laugh track. That's the best part. The best part. 844-527-8723 is how you call in here. I am David Simpson on the True Money Show Crusade Channel. King size truth from radio size speakers. The king is out and about wandering his realm while the court jesters are holding forth in the studio in lovely Mandeville, Louisiana. You can email me. I haven't checked the email lately. I guess I'll go peruse that just for fun. David at tffco.com. I did get an email from a listener. And I'm going to talk about it a little bit. His name is Brian, and Brian was commenting on my last show talking about mortgage payoffs and whether you should accelerate it or not accelerate it and all these other things. And he comes in with some interesting comments, and what's really neat about it is I was talking to another fellow last night, a friend of mine, who made some similar concepts to what Brian talks about. So apparently God's trying to give me some message, poking and prodding me to see the providence in all these discussions. So we'll talk about Brian's email, but if you want to email me, you can, david@tffco.com. So I'm going to have Franklin Sanders on the show in a week or two or three, I don't remember. And I love Franklin. He's such a great man and always has interesting advice and wonderful insights. He is, he's run a gold and silver bullion business for a long, long time. But he's also a farmer, a man who's just moved out to be a little bit more self-reliant. And because of that, has a lot of wisdom in the growth of his own being. His mind and body has grown through connecting more with the soil. So Franklin will be on in a few weeks, and we're going to ask him all these questions about gold and silver. But I just happened upon an article at Seeking Alpha. It's by, who is this by? Gosh, I can hardly read that name. Boris? Oh, I can't even read the last name. Well, I'll just tell you, go to Seeking Alpha, and it's from a month ago, 13 September 2018. And the title is Silver, A Once-in-a-Lifetime Opportunity. I'm not going to go through the whole article because we got Michael Hitchburn coming on a little bit. I also want to do my financial thought of the day before Michael comes on. But so here is kind of a synopsis of this article. So since the beginning of the year, at least as of September, this may have changed a little bit because remember this article is a month old. But don't worry about it. Here is the points are going to be roughly the same. Since the beginning of the year, silver is down 16%. So if you bought silver at the beginning of the year, you've kind of got your clock cleaned a little bit. You've lost 15 to 16%. Okay. However, that being said, silver and gold, always there's a relationship between those we call the silver and gold ratio. Franklin and I have talked about this before. Basically, you take the spot price of silver per ounce and divide it into the spot price of gold per ounce, and you get a ratio. Now, what's interesting about that ratio is that it kind of runs between a mean. It always kind of reverts to a mean, but it always tries to run between, we'll say 20 and 85. I might be expanding the ratio a little bit, but that's just for argument's sake. Okay. Well, right now silver is extremely cheap relative to gold. I'm going to talk about more on that in just a minute. Now, why is it cheap? Well, there's lots of theories out there. Demand is down. They say that since the emerging markets have gotten hit, and that's where a lot of the silver usage is, that's causing the demand to be down. I really don't care why it's down because I don't. Unlike Franklin, who does silver and gold investing, I'm not really an investor in silver. I'm more of a holder of silver. I like silver coins as a cash hedge. What does that mean? I mean, I believe that the greenbacks that we carry around in our wallets or purses could actually go to being worth nothing. And if that were the case, I think something that is more like true money, meaning gold and silver, would probably hold its value and still be worth something. So that's why I hold silver, both my own and in my clients' accounts, or I recommend to my client to do so. So by the way, just if you're interested, I did a little arithmetic equation with the actual stated inflation. I think inflation is worse than what's been stated, okay? But I took the government at their word and used their numbers, and I ran the projected value of silver from 1913 to today. And guess what? Even with the stated inflationary figures, silver has held its dollar value. What does that mean? It means that if you bought an ounce of silver in 1913 and you bought an ounce of silver today, you're paying relatively the same price after inflation. So what does that mean? It means silver's holding its value, unlike the dollar, which has lost most of its value. Now, I think silver is actually worth a lot more because I think stated inflation has been higher, but that's neither here nor there. Okay, So, finishing up this idea on silver, silver concept here. This ratio between silver and gold has a range, and silver tends to revert to the mean. And right now, silver is cheap relative to gold. As a matter of fact, they're both down, and the ratio is the lowest it's been since 1993. By the way, the last time it got this low, over the next 4 years, from 1993 to 1997, silver doubled in value. What is that telling us? Well, it's a giant buy indicator, if you ask me, especially if you're doing it for an investment. But to me, it's always a buy indicator because I hold it as a hedge against my cash. So what is the silver-gold ratio as of October 9th, 2018, as of yesterday? It's 82.3. And you go, Dave, that number means absolutely nothing to me. Okay, well, let me put it in context for you. The last time Franklin, or one of the times Franklin was on my show, he said if the silver-gold ratio gets to 85, it's at 82.3 as of yesterday, he said both metals are about to take off. Now, you can take it from a guy who studied gold and silver his whole life, and me who's repeating him, or you can just say, oh, I don't buy gold and silver. They're the worst investment of the whole world. That's what they all say. I know. I've heard it all before. So do what you will with this bit of information. But the silver-gold ratio is at 82.3. And the last time, or one of the times Frank was on my show, he said, when the silver-gold ratio gets to 85, both metals are depressed and they're both about to take off. Do-do-do-do-do. Is that a once-in-a-lifetime silver opportunity? Well, it may not be once-in-a-lifetime, but it's definitely a good time. 844-527-8723 is how you call in. Let's get Michael Hitchburn on the phone, if you don't mind, because in a few minutes I'd like to bring him on the show. Michael and I are going to talk about my financial question of the day, which is, how do you tell a good charity from a bad one, and is it even necessary? I mean, all you guys out there are charitable. You all support the crusade. You all are lovers of goodness and truth and beauty. And because of that, you support organizations that are trying to do those good things and those true things and those beautiful things. And that's all wonderful. I don't know, though, if we don't sometimes not do our homework on who we're giving our money to. And that's what we're going to talk about today with Mr. Hitchburn. Before I do, though, I thought maybe it'd be worthwhile to have a financial thought of the day. The financial thought of the day is about charity. Now, I get these new financial thoughts of the day. For a while, I was getting them off of a website, and they kind of got boring, I thought. And so I remembered this book that I'd given my son called The Universe According to Gilbert Keith Chesterton. It's a collection of Gilbert's thoughts that Dale Alquist put together. And basically, he made it to like kind of a little mini Chestertonian dictionary. You can look up words and see what Chesterton had to say about them. It's always inspiring. It's always interesting. And so here we have The Universe According to G.K. Chesterton, Chesterton's thoughts on the word charity. Now, listen to this. I love Chesterton's. A reverent agnosticism towards the complexity of the soul. That's it. I have to say, guys, if you think about it, you'll get it, but it was a little too deep for me when I first read that one. But there's more. Charity, an ideal that exists wholly for the undeserving, loving the unlovable. I think he wrote that in the thing called Paganism and Mr. Lowes Dickinson in his book Heretics. Okay. So that's my financial thought of the day. That's Gilbert Keith Chesterton on charity, a reverent agnosticism towards the complexity of the soul, an ideal that exists wholly for the undeserving, loving the unlovable. Well, I think we all are commanded to do such a thing, right? Love the least of his brothers. Help those. We have the corporal works of mercy. We have the spiritual works of mercy. Charity is one of these things that you probably could meditate on really eternally and never plumb the depths. But to help me get to my talk about charity and to, what would I say? And to answer my financial question today, how do you tell a good charity from a bad one, and is it even necessary? I've asked Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute to come and join me, and let me give you a little introduction of Michael. I know a lot of you guys have heard him talk on the Mike Church Show, but let me give you a quick bio. Michael holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Christendom College in Political Science and Economics and a Master's degree in Education from American Intercontinental University. So he's just a dummy, as you can tell. In 2017, he became a member of the John Paul II Academy for Human Life and the Family. He's the founder and president of the Lepanto Institute and a well-known public figure in the pro-life movement. Here's an interesting little tidbit. He spent 7.5 years as American Life League's director of the Defend the Faith Project. In this capacity, and listen to this, Michael has researched and produced an annual report on organizations receiving grant money from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, hence his expertise in the topic I'm going to be discussing today. This annual report, exposing dozens of grantees that are promoting abortion, birth control, homosexuality, and Marxism, has led to a nationwide review of the CCHD and a tightening of its guidelines. But he's not just a reviewer of public charities. He's helped to open 2 Catholic schools in Fredericksburg, Virginia. So he's created some charitable enterprises himself. And then, of course, his greatest charity of all, he lives in Virginia with his wife, Alyssa, and their six children. So he's one-upped me because I only have 5, doggone it. Well, anyway, Michael Hitchburn, welcome to the True Money Show. How are you doing? Good, fine, sir.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a blessing to have you on. So I'm going to pound on you right away. I'm going to hit you with the hardest question, and we'll circle back to do some definitional things and make sure everyone understands what the heck we're talking about. But just because I wanted to spring it on you, here's my financial question of the day that no one, by the way, has called in and answered. No one has written in to answer. How do you tell a good charity from a bad one, or is it even necessary to do so?
Well, that is a big question. How do you tell a good charity from a bad one? Well, the first thing that I do when I'm looking into charitable organizations is I want to know what kinds of projects they're involved in. Are they involved in health? Are they involved primarily health, but are they involved in activism? Are they involved in some sort of advocacy or lobbying? And if they are, then I want to know exactly what they're doing. Are they with health? Are they doing things with reproductive health?
Right.
Are they doing things with women's health? Okay, you start paring it down and you start looking into these particular questions, and ultimately, if they are in any way promoting contraception or abortion or anything along those lines, it's going to come out. Something else that I look into is whether they're involved in coalitions. Because when you're involved in a coalition, the coalition represents you from a philosophical and ideological standpoint, and they will then represent you when they do things. For instance, some coalitions sign on to open letters to government they do their lobbying or sign petitions or that kind of thing. And when they do that, as a member of that coalition, they are representing your organization.
I see.
So those are the kinds of things that I look into. And if it's a bad organization, they're going to do bad things. And,
yeah,
and that's really what it boils down to.
Well, okay, I'm talking to Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute. You can find Michael at www.lepantoinstitute.org. And at the very top of that webpage, by the way, there is a link to what he calls charity reports, which I found very enlightening because it shows you both his qualifications on what he's looking at in the question I just asked, how do you tell a good one from a bad one? And he tells you whether or not they should be supported or not. Sad to say, the majority are not worthy or not safe in supporting. So, but anyway, I think your question, your answer, Michael, kind of automatically responds to the second question, which is it necessary? What do you tell the person who's kind of indiscriminately giving money to, let's just say, the church, or let's just say to some random association or coalition or organization? What do you tell that person? Hey, dummy, you shouldn't give money to them, or is there a better process to use?
Well, first and foremost, I think everybody has an inherent understanding that we are all stewards of the gifts that God gives us.
Okay, good.
So if God is going to gift us with a large or sizable amount of money to be able to take care of those less fortunate, then we have to understand that that is not our money per se, but it is a stewardship that is given to us by God. And so as proper stewards, we have a direct responsibility to ensure that that money is being used appropriately. And so when we're looking at charitable organizations, we want to make sure that we are not giving money to organizations that would offend our Lord. And so that's why it's important.
Well, I mean, that's a beautiful answer. I'm trying to make some notes because I'm going to ask some follow-on questions as we get through this. But, you know, it's funny. I run into this a lot because I'm in financial planning, right? And I've been doing this for 20-plus years. And I've even asked the question on the air before, am I a hypocrite by both by both saying we shouldn't be materialists, but here I am in a very materialistic profession. And so, you're right. And so I regularly talk to my clients about just that concept you just discussed, stewardship. But I will tell you, Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute, that I am, I get to feel that I'm swimming not just upstream, but what's the old, even worse, a more callous discussion, way of saying it, I'm pissing in the wind a bit, because people will hear my discussion on stewardship and just immediately blow me off and say, Dave, what's my retirement account going to be in 5 years? You know, it is an extremely difficult thing because they take absolute, complete ownership of everything that they have, and they completely disregard the idea that they're gifts from God or that what you just said, that they're stewards. Any magic ideas on how to make that a more profound and realistic thing in someone's life?
Well, that kind of is the magic question of the day. But I do think that a lot of it, there is some wisdom in the modern understanding of evangelization. I really hate ecumenism and all that stuff, but one of the things that the ecumenists and the evangelists will say is that you have to meet people where they are. Obviously, if somebody is very deeply entrenched in a materialist perspective,
yeah,
then they are going to balk at a more spiritual or a more nuanced approach to charitable giving.
Yeah.
But if we want to work on them, when we want to coax them in the right direction, you plant little seeds. Absolutely ask our Lord for wisdom and guidance with whatever you say to them and say, Lord, I don't know how to approach this person. Give me the words. And he will.
Yeah.
Especially Our Lady. I mean, Our Lady's been very, very gracious in assisting me. So I can imagine that she would assist you.
Yeah.
But, you know, in dealing with people, some people are more materially minded. Some people are just so focused on what they're doing, they're not paying attention. And some people just, frankly, don't care.
Yeah.
So you just plant seeds. You plant seeds and you water them with your prayers, and that's the best you can do.
Well, that's a great answer. Like, and by the way, I think what you said to begin with, meeting people where they are, that's exactly kind of what my initial quest was. Okay, you know, look, I know I'm getting into this arena. I know that it's materialistic minded. I know that I'll be swimming upstream. And it's just frustrating after so long, you know, after doing this for so long, that I see so few of my clients with the seeds that I've planted. Responding. I don't see a lot of sprouts, I guess is what I'm saying. And it's just a little frustrating, you know, because and at some points, really, to the point where I go, I'm quitting. You know, I'm done with this. I'm not making a difference. It's not, they're not changing. As a matter of fact, like I said, maybe I'm inculcating in them, like I'm just kind of like, it's a wink and a nudge. Hey, you ought to give some of this away because, you know, you're just a steward, right? But Dave doesn't really believe that. You know, it really is. It's just kind of a shame. But I do have a solve that I'm going to be introducing, which might be of interest to you and a lot of other Catholic apostolates and enterprises and charitable enterprises, because I'm going to add something to what I call my financial report card that I hope will draw a constant attention to the very idea that we're talking about, which is you're a steward and you ought to be more generous and liberal in your giving. So I'll talk to you about that in the second hour when we get around to it, because I mentioned to Mike and Beverly Stevens of her what's that magazine?
Regina Magazine.
Regina Magazine. And and they both said, oh, great idea, Dave. Please do it. We need the support. So I'll tell you about that when we get later on maybe some solutions to the problem. Let's try to drive down a little bit more into the problem, though. So, by the way, I'm talking to Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute. I'm David Simpson on the True Money Show. The topic of today is charity. The topic of today is, we've already expounded upon it a little bit and increased the idea of stewardship. None of these things we own in the truest sense, guys. They were given to us as blessings, and we're supposed to share those blessings. In the old days, they said something called noblesse oblige. You actually had a responsibility to take care of the less fortunate. What an idea. Well, so one of the ways, Michael, that this was so regularly how we kind of dispatched or dispensed with our duty was we gave money to the church because we thought, hey, these guys are just – they're there all the time with a building, a dedicated staff that they can see who has a need in the community. They can dole it out, et cetera. And now we don't even know if we can faithfully or in good conscience give money into the collection basket. What do you say to those people? What is the answer? Is there an answer to those saying, "Hey, stop giving to the church, stop giving because of all the scandals," or are we still duty bound to give to it, irrespective of what they do? What does Michael Hitchburn have to say?
We are always duty bound to support the church financially. There's no exemption. That said, that doesn't mean that you have to give carte blanche. When you give to your local parish, you have the ability to earmark whatever funds you give. You can say, I'm donating X amount of dollars to X parish, and then in the memo section, you can write, this goes toward the electric bill, or this goes toward the building fund, or this goes towards the priest's salary, or something along those lines. And that money, once earmarked, cannot be touched for any other purpose other than what it is specified for.
Really? So I had served on a finance council of a large parish in New Orleans at one point, and it was told to me that whatever the collection plate is, basically, they've got to record it, and that the bishop can tax that parish at whatever level he wants with irrespective of the earmarks. Is that not true, or am I talking two different things?
The bishop has the ability to tax the fund of the church. Now, here's the interesting thing. If everything is earmarked, then the bishop can't really take anything out of that church.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yep. So, I mean, if everything is specified for parish use, there's nothing that the bishop can touch. However, anything that winds up in the general fund belongs to the bishop. He can do with it whatever he wants. Now, there is another thing that has been bandied about that people could do, and that's to set up a separate 501c3 organization that they can contribute to, like call it the St. Matthew Fund for X parish.
Right.
And all the money for that you want to contribute to the church goes into that particular fund. And then the executors of that fund can execute disbursements to the parish in order to pay off whatever it is the parish needs. So, in other words, the executors of that, you know, the pastor goes up and says, "Okay, we need for the budget this month, we need to make sure that X amount of dollars goes toward the electric bill, and X amount of dollars goes toward the mortgage, and so much goes toward salaries and that kind of thing." And then the executor of the fund cuts checks for those specific items, and that takes care of everything, and the bishop cannot touch that fund at all.
Wow. 844-527-8723. If you have a question for Michael Hitchburn, if you're struggling with this this issue yourself, you're like, oh, should I withhold money? Is that bad? Am I doing my duty as a good, faithful Christian and Catholic? Well, you know, he already answered that question, but if you want to pose it in a different way, or maybe I didn't ask it in the way that you think is most relevant, please call in 844-527-8723. You can also email me, david@tffco.com. I'll just screwed up my email again. I always mess up my computer, Michael. I have this ongoing battle with my computer. It doesn't want to work when I'm on the air for some reason.
I would like to add to that that just in the off chance that you wind up giving money to your parish, people need to understand that they are not morally culpable for how much a bishop taxes that parish and how that money is used. Say if the bishop is someone like Cardinal McCarrick and he's using that money for gay prostitutes or something.
Right. Yeah, you're not responsible for how he uses it.
You're not morally culpable for that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think the essence of that is once given away, you've given it away. It's not yours. Whoever's using it is using it at their own at their own risk, right?
That's correct.
Let's talk real quick about your solutions, because this has been a big issue lately. I mean, I don't know how many people are following church finances, but first of all, I'll tell you, let's step back one thing real quick. So I was talking to a friend, and he seemed to think it was morally reprehensible for someone to even talk about withholding money from the church. Of course, he was talking about withholding contributions into the basket, and none of these things that you discussed, not like earmarks, not like setting up a separate financing vehicle through some type of 501c3 charitable organization or whatever. So I guess he didn't know the nuances. But his point was, I think, how terrible-minded of us to vote with our dollars, if you will, to try to cause some impact on the leadership of the church. And I don't understand that at all, because unfortunately – I mean, let's not be naive here. Many, maybe too many, of the church hierarchy are exactly motivated by money, much to their shame, I would think, and it should be to their chagrin. But isn't that a reality that we just have to deal with?
It is to an extent. I mean, we are not morally culpable for how the bishop uses the money, but we also aren't supposed to be stupid about it either.
Right.
If we, for instance, a lot of people say, well, you can't not donate to the CCHD, or you can't not donate to CRS because they belong to the church and you have a responsibility to support those programs. This is not true. They are programs of the bishops. They are not the church,
mm-hmm.
and they don't represent the church. So when you look at how money is used, you know, when the bishop takes up a collection, there are various ways that the bishop takes collections from parishes. He'll either have the bishop's Lenten appeal. He'll have, just the regular tax, as it were, that he puts on the parish. He also takes up collections for local programs as well, local Catholic charities or the local Campaign for Human Development or whatever it is. You're not obliged to give to every single one of these programs. In fact, you're not even obliged to give to any of those programs,
mm-hmm.
but you are obliged to give to the church. That is the only rule in canon law when it comes to tithing. You have a responsibility to give 10% of your income to the church. That's it. How that's given is not specified.
Right.
So you can be very smart with the way that money's used.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned canon law, because while you're saying that, I typed that in. Get some of these references, I was online, and we'll get to this a little bit more too on what are our obligations. But Canon 222, Section 1, the Christian faithful are obliged to assist with the needs of the church so that the church has what is necessary for divine worship, for the works of the apostolate and of charity, and for the decent support of ministers. If I'm reading that right, Michael, it sounds like we're supposed to support for liturgy, divine worship, for the works of the apostle, which I'm assuming is going to include the idea of caring for the poor, for the less fortunate, and for the decent support of ministers. Am I missing something, or is there more to it?
No, that's it.
Yeah, so if we think about what our money ends up getting used for, which I guess we should say, it would only be fair to say this, if we're not morally culpable for how they use the money, then I guess we're also not supposed to be telling them how they ought to use the money either, right?
Well, we don't have a responsibility to tell them, okay, I want you to use this money to go out and buy these kinds of vestments. I mean,
correct.
You can buy vestments and give them to the church if you want.
Right.
But, you know, telling a bishop how to spend money is not really our responsibility. It's not our duty.
Right. But we can influence, obviously, when we see something.
Yes, we can.
Yeah, when we see something that's being done that's evil, especially if it's being done through financing vehicles, and let's face it, the guy's the way of the world. The reason I have the True Money Show is because finance dominates so much the world. It ought not to, but it does. And we have to be realistic. We have to live in the world we have to be an instrument of God's grace in the world we were born into. And since finance is such a dominant, motivation in the world today, and since we know it's being used for evil enterprises, a la abortion, euthanasia and so on. We do have to be wise, as Michael's talking about, with our dollars and how they're used. Now, he says we can't control it. We're not responsible, morally culpable on how they use it. We really can't dictate to them once we give it to them. But if we give it to them with certain conditions, then they have to abide by that as well. I think those are great solves, Michael. I really do. By the way, if you missed it earlier, I'm talking to Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute. He says that that if money is earmarked for a specific goal, then no one can use it but for that goal. The bishop can't tax it, and the parish priest can't misuse it. And he also mentioned a separate charitable arrangement, maybe a private 501c3, where the congregation gives to that 501c3, and then the 501c3 gives their money with earmarks, again protecting the use of the money. Are there any other means that you've thought of, Michael, or that you've seen being used throughout the country or the world?
No, those are really the only two means that I've been able to come up with thus far. I mean, if anybody has any other ideas, I'm certainly open to them. There are various ways, as I'm sure you know, for people to shelter their funds and to protect them from misuse. So if there are other tricks or any other ways to create protections for that money, I think that it's a good way to, it's something that we should explore. It's something that we as stewards have an obligation at this point. I mean, you look at the way some of these funds are being used, for crying out loud, there was a bishop, I can't remember which one, but after the diocese got assessed some $20 million legal compensation for abuse, the bishop started running a fundraising campaign saying, oh, we need to pay these legal bills to pay off all these people that were abused. And, I mean, well, kudos to the bishop for being honest about it, but I don't know that the laity are responsible for paying fees for abuse.
That's one of the ones that rankles me, I have to say, because we're already giving for them to be an enterprise, right? To be the body of Christ and the physical representation on earth. And then they go do things untoward and they say, can you bail us out too? I'm sorry. Right. I start to draw a line at some point.
Yeah. I mean, after a while, you just kind of shake your head and go, I can't believe you're actually asking me for money for this.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, kudos for the bishop to be as honest and upfront about it as he was. Some other bishops would simply say, "Oh, we're going to do the bishop's Lenten appeal to cover expenses for the diocese," and not specify, and then use that money to pay off, you know, victims.
So I guess we'll close up canon law because I don't want to stay on it too long. I know it gets kind of dry, but if you're looking for more citations, I told you canon 222. There's also canon 1260 through 1263. And so I'll real quick, the 1260, the church has an innate right to require from the Christian faithful those things which are necessary for the purposes proper to it. 1261, the Christian faithful are free to give temporal goods for the benefit of the church. There's a section 2 on that. The diocesan bishop is bound to admonish the faithful of the obligation mentioned. So he does have to tell us every once in a while that we are required, duty-bound, to support the church. 1262, the faithful are to give support to the church by responding to appeals and according to the norms issued by the Conference of Bishops. And then 1263 is a little bit longer. What does this one say? After the diocesan bishop has heard the Finance Council and the Presbyterial Council, he has the right to impose a moderate tax. Okay, so that's his taxing authority on local parishes. So that, to me, you know, kind of sums up the canon law. I want to go back real quick, though, Michael. You mentioned tithing. There are a lot of people in the Catholic realm who don't believe tithing is a real word, or that it can possibly mean 10%, or that we're duty bound to do so. Can you kind of recap that a little bit? What is tithing? Is it 10%? And are you required?
Okay, tithing literally means 10%. Tithe is, I can't remember which language it might, I think it might be Latin, but it literally means 10%. So yes, we are obliged, morally bound, to give 10% of our income. Now, sometimes it's not entirely clear whether that is pre-tax or post-tax.
Yeah.
My wife and I go back and forth on that a little bit, and I think we've finally settled that it's 10% of surplus after expenses. So it's basically if you're being taxed on your income and you don't actually take home $60,000, you're actually only taking home, you know, maybe $45,000 after taxes and everything else, then it would be 10% of $45,000 a year rather than 10% of 60.
Okay.
So how you assess that 10% is typically what you want to put into your collection plate. So I think, please don't cite me as a moral authority on this because I'm still not entirely clear, but from what I've been able to tell, 10% would mean after taxes, not prior.
Okay. I've heard it argued both ways, and I really, you know, I'll put it this way. Anybody who's working to that end, I don't really care. I mean, in other words, if they're thinking about the issue, God has put it on their hearts, and they're working their level best to do what they know they ought to do, I think they're in the right track, and I'm not going to berate them.
Absolutely.
On the percentage level, you know.
And we also have to remember that God will never be outdone in generosity. So however generous you can be and trust in the Lord by giving, even to the point of hurting, we can always be assured that God will be far more generous than we are.
You bet. 844-527-8723 is how you call in. Jacob, when do I have to cut out of here for a break? Okay, I got about 6 more minutes, Michael, so you can hold over for the break, can't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
We could go back to one thing.
Sure.
I wanted to address what you had asked in the very beginning about planting seeds and talking to materialists.
Oh yeah.
One thing that came to mind is that when talking to people who are materially minded and trying to get them to start donating to charitable organizations, well, if they're materialistically minded, then start talking to them in their language and just say, you know, if you start giving money to charitable tax exempt organizations, you can shelter your money and use that as a tax write-off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's part of my solve I'm going to tell you about later in the show about what I'm designing for Mike and Beverly Stevens and you and whoever else that come across my path.
Perfect.
It starts with that. I think you could add, though, too. I don't know if you were going to go here. I interrupted you. But so I also think you could maybe appeal to them about the good things that charities do.
Sure.
Did you go to a Catholic school or a Christian school? Hey, did you go to that where your baby's born in that religiously affiliated hospital? Whatever. And you might say, don't you think that you want to allow that thing to continue on? Maybe that is enough of a material connection where they go, yeah, that's true, Dave. I need to give back.
Yep. Yep.
844-527-8723 is how you call in. I am David Simpson on the True Money Show. Today we're talking charity. We're talking giving. We're talking about maybe giving wisely because of how money can be misused, how finance can be misused. And we've seen a lot of that in the news lately, guys. And all I can say is I'm sorry that our money has been used for such terrible things. I have a man on the phone, Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute. Michael did some early work when he worked for the Human Life. Was it Human Life League? Is that what it was?
American Life League.
American Life League. He researched, sadly, institutes and charities that were allegedly Christian in their values and principles, but doing abortion and euthanasia and all kind of other untoward activities. And your money and my money very likely ended up in some of these campaigns, I'm sad to say. He's told us a couple of ways to maybe reel that in, just to rein it in, to stop it from happening. And Michael, I have a question from a listener via email, which goes to one of your solves. So Michael said, the two that he's come across is that earmarked money, by the way, I saw this in canon law as well, earmarked money cannot be used for anything but what the person wrote on there as his earmarks. So if you put on there salary for the priest, it's got to be used for salary for the priest. If your retirement for the religious, it's got to be used for retirement for the religious. So Sandy writes in, being new, David, I hope you can clarify for me how to earmark my funds. Is this on my personal check? So that's the question.
Yeah, In the memo section of your check, you can specify how the money is to be earmarked, and that if you have duplicate checks, then you have a check and balance, as it were, on that particular earmark. So you can say in your checkbook, this was used or this was donated for this specific purpose, and then when the diocese or the parish gets that particular check, They can't put that in any other fund other than what it was earmarked for. So you write it in the memo section of your check. If it's on an envelope, you should write it on the envelope also.
So, Michael, I'm going to ask this question because maybe I'm being a little liberal with my understanding of canon law and with the whole obligation of supporting the church. I was talking about my friend earlier who was kind of, you know, taken aback by my talking about withdrawing funds or withholding them in some way, shape, or form to try to impact the misuse and also to impact the leadership with, hey, we're serious about this. You guys got to stop jacking us around. And how he, in his response to me, well, so in part of my argument to him, I said, well, I understand that we're duty bound to support the church. And I believe that we're supposed to support our pastors and their ability to minister and so on. And so I said to him, I think it's completely within our rights. If I'm going to give $100 one month to the church, can I not take cash, $100, and either go spend it, let's say pay the guy who's cutting the grass or, I don't know, give it to Father and say, Father, I want you to use this for your gasoline. I'm making things up at this point. But am I off base by saying I can do that? Isn't that kind of an earmark?
That is, but if you're going to give cash for something that is being done on the church grounds or something along those lines, it doesn't. That would fall more under the auspices of alms and not so much as a tithe.
Okay. Okay. So that really is not an appropriate earmarking. It's just me being charitable above and beyond. So tithing represents some type of actual denotation through a check, in other words, of gifting to the church.
Yeah, it's deliberately going into the function of the church herself. If you're giving the guy $100 who's mowing the lawn or something along those lines, yes, you're aiding the church, but that's not really so much a tithe because it's not. It's an immediate need. It's not necessarily like the your planned giving to the church based on your income. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we'll come back to it. So I'm gonna that's Michael Hitzbrenner. I'm gonna take a little break here, Michael. Hang on, and when we come back, we're gonna get back in that topic and a whole lot more on the True Money Show, Crusade Channel, King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers.
They say money is the root of all evil. But on the True Money Show, you'll learn that the Federal Reserve is the root of all evil money. The True Money Show with David Simpson, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade Channel.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the True Money Show. I am David Simpson, your host. This hour, every day, from 3 to 5. I know it's not always live. I know it. Don't accuse me. I am here today with Michael Hitzbrenner of the Lepanto Institute. We'll get back to Michael in just a minute. Wonderful discussion on charity. He's even clarifying some points in my mind, because I talk about this stuff, I think, much too loosely sometimes, because I'm not trying to always talk to it from a purely church perspective, but many times just, you know, in the more the vernacular, if you will, to people in their financial lives. So it's good to have this discussion. It'll make me hone my discussions a little bit further, I believe. So we'll get back to Michael in just a second here. I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you've been, I don't know, what we'd say, an aficionado of the free stream. Let's say since we started this broadcasting almost three years ago now, and maybe you were getting it for free forever on the free stream. You didn't care the quality was lower. You didn't care that you were what Mike calls a Bernie Sanders listener. None of that bothered you. You go, hey, it doesn't matter. I'm still listening to the Crusade Channel for free. Well, guess what? Those days are over. Yes, the free stream now is purely what it was always supposed to be, which is a preview channel. You'll get a good, you know, well scattered around diversified examples of all the shows that are on the air, Mike Church Show, Reverse Deception, Brother Andre Marie's Reconquest, The True Money Show. You'll get a smattering of all those shows kind of sprinkled throughout the broadcasting day on the preview stream, and that's all you're going to get. And then you'll get a little, hey, if you want to support the crusade, you want to learn, you know, hear more of the live program, you want to be able to call in, blah, blah, blah. There'll be little voiceovers telling you how to become a member. So if you've been listening to the free stream and now you're mad at us for changing it and locking it out, well, we're sorry. That's an advertising vehicle for us. We are wholly member-supported. That is a very difficult thing to be in this day and age because nobody wants to pay for anything, it seems like. We're talking about charity today. Nobody wants to give any money away either. It's amazing. There are still a lot of charity out there. I know. I see it in Americans every day. But I think on the whole, it seems to be shrinking. There's still some very generous hearts out there. Maybe it's because on the whole, we're all getting poorer, which I think is actually true. It usually happens in a socialist takeover. The world, the country around you gets poorer and poorer, and nobody seems to know why, except for those people who are blaming the real thing, which is socialism and Marxism and Leninism and all those kind of things. Anyway, we'll get to that too, maybe. Maybe Mike will talk to that in just a second. So if you've been listening to the free stream, it is over. You have to, that'll just be a kind of a survey of all the programs. If you want to be a true blue crusader and listen live, you have to go to the member page, crusadechannel.com/join, crusadechannel.com/join. And join up. By the way, there is a 30-day free trial available, so you can still get 30 more days fall free. Okay. So that's my announcement on that. And I hope you do go join. I hope you'll consider joining us. This is the only station that I know of, the only broadcasting entity out there that I know of that is dedicated to broadcasting the truth 24/7. Now, that's a big... a big enterprise we've undertaken, but we think we're up to the task. All right, so I was talking to Michael Hitchburn right there before the break, and we were discussing tithing. We were discussing charitable giving. He answered my question of the day, how do you tell a good charity from a bad one? And he was discussing my idea, excuse me, of just giving money to maybe some enterprise going on church grounds, like, hey, Father, here's some money for your gas. Hey, Father, I paid your gardener to weed your garden, whatever. And he said, no, that would actually be alms because you're just giving to someone in the church orb, but it wouldn't be tithing. When we were off here, I got on the phone and talked to Michael a little bit, and I think I came up with this distinction, Michael. You tell me if you like this or not. So I think tithing, you said, was supporting the functions of the church, which must mean we're giving money to the church so they can decide how to use it, whereas alms would be any separate giving that just maybe helps the church or any other entity that's not the church. Is that maybe a fair distinction?
That's pretty close, I think. I mean, obviously, if you're going to earmark funds for the function of the church, that would fall under that category of tithing.
Right.
But again, it would have to pass through the appropriate church hands, I think, is really where the distinction is.
Right, right.
Because if you're simply going to pay someone's bill, yeah, I mean, you're helping with the function of the church to a certain extent, but you're doing it so directly that it's not really going through the church.
Correct.
That makes sense.
I think it does. Like I said, earmarking might get on that line too, but then again, earmarking is actually specified in canon law. As I was looking through some of these canon law things, it says you can earmark and they're not allowed to violate it. So I know that means is available and you're not violating kind of this idea that we're talking about, that somehow you're not giving it to the church.
That's correct.
Okay, let me ask you one other thing about tithing before I move on to a secondary issue, which was how you analyze charities on the Lepanto Institute website. So every time we're given the Lenten discussion about fasting and almsgiving and praying, fasting, and almsgiving are the three pillars of the sacrificial nature of Lent. You know, they talk about almsgiving, and they say time, talent, and treasure. It's usually how it's presented to us. Can you give time, talent, and treasure as the tithe or not?
Well, technically no, because tithing specifies funds. You can give your time, you can give your talent, but giving time and talent does not cover the cost and the needs of the church in terms of financial contribution. So while you can now, on the other hand, if the time that you donate or the talent that you donate, such as building a cathedral,
mm-hmm.
okay, you're participating in the building works of the church. If you're being paid for that, well, then you're contributing your talents and you're contributing your time, but you're also being compensated.
Correct.
That wouldn't count. If you go into your parish and you simply walk in and you say, you know what, the roof is leaking and we need to replace these hoses and all, you know, and you go in and you, with your own money, contribute to the good of the parish, that could go toward your tithe.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, I kind of always have too, and I did exactly the same analysis you did, which was, you know, let's say you're a lawyer, you're making $150 an hour, and you go in there and you're spending your hours doing something that is directly supporting the church, as you just said, and I'm not able to earn $150 an hour as a lawyer, then I just did sacrifice, whether it be monetary or not, I sacrificed $150 or $200 or $300 or $450, depending on the time I spent. And it sounds to me like it's the same thing as giving the $450 if I'd have worked and given it to them.
I think that would probably count. I would recommend going to your confessor or talking to a canon lawyer specifically,
yeah,
because
yeah.
that's a little bit above my understanding, but it sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah. Okay. So, and that, by the way, also excellent advice from Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute. You know, we're laymen and we are out here, toiling away in our own enterprises and our own work and so on and so forth. And we do our best to be informed Catholics and be good and be just good Christian men. But we are not absolute, what would you say, purveyors of truth on all things canon law or all things Catholic dogma. And so please fact check us and double check us and ask your spiritual advisor and make sure that we are staying on the straight and narrow. One of the things we hold ourselves out as broadcasting the truth 24/7, but we know and we describe truth as conformity of mind to reality. We're doing our level best, but we know that we can communicate wrong. We know that we can be in error in our minds. We know that someone could call us and say, hey, y'all didn't mention this idea or this thought. And so if we're not broadcasting the truth, please, please go get it from the source. We're just doing our level best to be an advocate for it. Okay, let me ask you something else, Michael. So I was on your website. This is how I got the idea of bringing you on the True Money Show, because you're talking about charities, and I regularly talk about charity and tithing and so on, and almsgiving. And you have this charity reports on there. I'm going to go click on that link while I'm here. So you can go to lepantoinstitute.org, and you will find what I'm talking about. And at the very top, there's a hyperlink to it says charity reports. And then Michael has surveyed several charities and gives you where it's safe to contribute, not safe, whether they're faith-based or secular. But what I found most intriguing was your qualifiers, your discerning criteria. And I'll just list. So it says facilitates abortion, facilitates contraception, facilitates homosexuality, facilitates Marxism. Okay, first question, why those categories? Second question, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Come on, Michael, what's wrong with Marxism? What do you think? Give me a little insight here on where you came up with these things.
Okay, the reason I picked those five categories is because they are the five most common issues facing the church today. They are moral issues. They are moral issues that the church has directly spoken on and definitively ruled on.
Okay.
There are other things that you could look into. There are people who talk about, does the organization cheat people out of money? Or do they, some of these are very subjective things. How do you define cheating? How do you define not paying a just wage? How do you, so there are social justice-y kind of things that you could look into, but there's no absolute standard to hold a benchmark with in order to make a proper ruling.
Yeah.
I mean, when I look into these groups, and CCHD, they like to fund a lot of social justice-type organizations. And some of these groups are just so nonsensical. There's one, it's a kind of a coalition network called Interfaith Worker Justice, and their big thing is talking about making sure people are getting their fair wages. Well, how do you define fair wages?
Yeah.
You know, how do you define, and this is why I stuck to things that are absolutely definitively ruled upon by the church that are moral issues. If you want to give to a Catholic organization and not a Protestant one, well, there's a very easy defining benchmark. If you want to make sure that you're giving only to Catholic organizations, well, that rules out a whole bunch of other ones.
Well, all right, so I'll give everybody a little flavor of this, Michael. So I'm a pick one. I'll pick two. So CARE International is listed. So his first criteria, religious affiliation, it's listed as secular. I won't tell you what his grade is till the very end. Okay, then he says, facilitates abortion? Yes. Facilitates contraception? Yes. Facilitates homosexuality? Yes. There's no other discussion going on in Michael Hitchburn's website or the Lepanto Institute website. It's a simple, like he said, there's a dogma that's been stated. There's a truth that's been revealed. The church has absolutely defined this as something we can say yes or no to. In other words, it's a propositional statement. It's either true or it's false. We know what it is. And so he says, yes, they do abortion. Yes, they facilitate contraception. Yes, they facilitate homosexuality. By the way, no on Marxism. So he gives Lepanto a grade of not safe. Then the very next one, Caritas in Veritate International, the religious affiliation is Catholic. So if you were a non-Catholic, didn't want to support Catholic enterprises, you would then say no to this one yourself personally. But he goes through the criteria: abortion, no; contraception, no; homosexuality, no; Marxism, no. Therefore, Michael Hitchburn, Lepanto Institute says Lepanto grade safe to give to. If that gives everyone a little idea what we're talking about, and by the way, Michael, I think it's brilliant what you did. I like the idea of standing on firm ground, not on something that we could argue about or be speculative about or think would be mealy mouth or wishy washy. You just went to the very core of what makes something good or bad.
Well, in addition to those benchmarks and just the table itself. If you click on the name of the organization, it'll take you to a report page giving all of the evidence to back up everything that we said in the grade that we gave it.
Boy, you are definitely a crusader in training, my friend. You see, so one of the things that we always talk about here, we say, okay, what is truth? Truth is conforming of mind to reality. Then people go, well, then they start all the relativistic stuff. What's real? You know, how do you know it's real? You know, how do you know you're conforming? How do you know what your mind? You know, all this garbage. And we go, well, one of the things we look for is criteria, and then we also look for measuring devices. Well, you have the measuring devices all laid out, don't you?
Yep, we sure do.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Everything is measured, and everything is backed up with absolute facts from primary sources.
Okay, so I was teasing you earlier about what in the heck's wrong with Marxism. I will answer your question, and you can elaborate. So the church,
So
the church has said that communism is intrinsically evil. Is that what you're relying on?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, there's so many different encyclicals and papal definitions regarding socialism and communism in absolute condemnation. That there simply is no wiggle room. Even John the 23rd said himself that one could not even support moderate socialism.
There you go. Good. You see, I don't see that enough. You know, I'm on the air here all the time, and I talk about this, and I think people think I'm a whack job or something. But this thing that is destructive to society, it denies the very principle of creation, because we were created as individuals. We will be judged as individuals. There is no collective. There should not be a collective. And we can't have groupthink or group responsibility or group anything. And yet people constantly do this. And it's completely destroying our ability to have a cohesive society. And I think I'm being backed up by no less than the Lepanto Institute's criticism of facilitating Marxism. Thank you very much, Michael Hitchburn.
Well, my grandfather is really the one who introduced me to the problems of socialism and communism and everything else. Back in the 1960s and 70s, he was very active in Southern California, going around and giving talks against socialism, giving talks against Marxism. But he also worked closely with the California State Police and the FBI in exposing communist cell networks throughout Southern California. One of my favorite stories is of him going into a Communist Party meeting somewhere in Southern California with a Tytac microphone and a tape recorder taped underneath his armpit with a button in his pocket. And he was so nervous because he could hear that tape recorder going click, click, click every time he pushed the button. He thought everyone else in the room could hear it too.
Sounds like your grandfather and my dad might have been compatriots. I'm not really sure. So, yeah, I learned about all this stuff when I was like a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, and And matter of fact, you mentioned California. There was a guy out there, Schwartz, I think was his name, Christian Anti-Communism Crusade. And if you listen to how crazy this is. So I started going to a Christian Brothers Catholic school in high school, and it was being proposed to me as a young lad who was virulently anti-communist that the early Christian church was basically a socialist enterprise. In other words, that they endorsed socialism. I know you know the answer to that question. But anyway, but as a 13, 14-year-old in eighth grade, I'm confused. Like, oh, my gosh, I've learned all these things against communism. Now the Christian brothers are telling me that it's a good thing, you know, some kind of crypto-communism is going on in the early church, and that's all a good thing. And so I don't know how, but I found Fred Schwarz's name, Christian Anti-Communism Crusade, and I hand-wrote him a letter as like a 14-year-old. Was the church communist? You know,
and, wow.
Yeah, I don't think he ever responded to me. But after that, I got my answers in line, and I figured out where the deception was. But maybe you could talk to that a little bit. Does that still go on, by the way? Are they still proposing that the church is this socialistic enterprise?
Oh, well, not only that, but I would actually go so far as to say that the church has been infiltrated by Marxists.
Oh, well, no doubt about that. Yeah, sure.
I mean, Bella Dodd was very clear that she helped recruit 1,100 communist radicals into the seminaries.
Right.
What's his name? Manning. Manning Johnson testified before the House Committee on Un-American Activities that he was instrumental in going through the motions of putting communists in seminaries by the order of the Kremlin. And so, I mean, you can look at the fruits of it today and see that the Jesuit liberation theology down mm-hmm. in South America. You can see it in terms of all the social justice nonsense that's going on with the Campaign for Human Development. Yeah, Marxism has definitely infiltrated the church.
Yeah. Well, no, I wasn't saying that. I was just wondering, do they still indoctrinate 14-year-olds in saying that the early church was communist? I don't know. I haven't been in eighth grade for a long time, but that's what I was getting from the Christian Brothers way back in 1970s.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that they I'm sure that there is still that indoctrination. I've run into all kinds of Catholics that are now saying, "Oh no, the church has always been socialist, and socialism is good, and Jesus was a socialist." I'm just like, "Are you on crack?
Yeah,
what's
I know.
Wrong with you?"
I know. I mean, we've explicitly said the exact opposite. I mean, that it's
right.
Very rarely does a church come out with something so definitive, and to use the words inherently evil. Is mm-hmm. I mean it's done, it's over with. We don't need to discuss it anymore. You can't discuss it anymore. We know right. that it's inherently evil. Communism, socialism, Marxism, put whatever tag you want on it, it's inherently evil and it's destructive to society. And yet people are running around believing that somehow or another it still can be good in some fashion. I just disagree. I'm glad you had that as a one of the indicators of a not safe organization to contribute to.
Well, and in addition to that, I do see a lot of people who, the same people who espouse socialism and think that the church is socialistic and that it should be, are also the same ones who say that, well, that contraception is perfectly acceptable and that there's nothing wrong with homosexual relationships and that abortion is a woman's choice and there's really not life, and that Thomas Aquinas even said that the quick, you know, the ensoulment doesn't even take place until quickening.
Oh, whatever.
you know, these same people, they rehash all of these old, tired arguments without looking at the complete totality of the church's 2,000-year doctrine, and they cherry-pick.
Yeah, that's about the sum total of Catholicism these days, is cherry picking what you want to believe and disbelieve, and then throwing out the rest. And it really is a shame. Well, like I said, I've never seen. I'm so glad you put it on there. Facilitates Marxism as a qualifier or disqualifier for a charitable organization, because I've never seen that before. I know you're on firm ground. I know it's absolutely right. And I'll tell you, I have to say, most of the charities that come, you know, prancing through my parish and asking for money. I don't have at that point the wherewithal to analyze them efficiently. But I tend to think more often than not that they have some type of quasi Marxist attitude going on with them, just from the way they talk and and the things they say. And so I generally don't give to them, because when in doubt, I don't support those things that I don't know anything about. But you have it as a descriptor, like I said, on your website. So now I will know. And by the way, one of the ones you said is safe to contribute to, what I was glad to see, was one called Cross Catholic Outreach. And they came to our church not too long ago. And by the way, they sounded really good, but I still didn't give because I wasn't certain. But they did sound better than the average bear. And I was tempted to give money. I said, well, I'm going to wait and find out. Well, now I found out. So thank you for your website.
Absolutely. I actually have gone through Cross Catholic Outreach's program very, very thoroughly because if I'm going to give anybody my endorsement, I need to be absolutely certain that they're a good organization. When I was in Rome for the very first time 4 years ago, I met with individuals at Cor Unum, which is the church's it's the office that's responsible for the charities of the Catholic Church. It was set up specifically to be kind of an oversight of the church's charitable action. And I was complaining to them about Catholic Relief Services and about Caritas Internationalis, not to be mistaken with Caritas International, which is the organization that I listed as good.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two different Caritases, and they need to be understood as distinct. But Caritas Internationalis is the Vatican's own umbrella agency that's aid and development throughout the entire world. So Catholic Relief Services is a member of Caritas. Development and Peace up in Canada is a member of Caritas. CordAid, which is the Netherlands aid and development organization, is a member of Caritas. Caritas is thoroughly socialistic. It's absolutely Marxist through and through. And so I was complaining to them about Caritas, and I was complaining to them about Catholic Relief Services, and I said, you know, I've been looking into Cross Catholic Outreach, and I see that they seem very good. And the individual at Cor Unum confirmed to me that they were very good, and that quite frequently Catholic Relief Services will attack Cross Catholic Outreach because they are not doing the same kinds of things that CRS does.
My Lord. My Lord. Well, you know, today is the day, and every day is the day to say, Lord, have mercy, Lord, have mercy, Lord, have mercy. Well, listen, Michael, I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds or so. I do want to move on with my show. I got a few other topics I promised people I'd talk about, but I really appreciate you coming on the show. I want to tell everyone, this is Michael Hitchburn of the Lepanto Institute, a brilliant website. If you're looking for organizations to support or not support, we've already discussed the question. My question today is, how do you tell a good charity from a bad charity, and is it necessary? We've already discussed that it's necessary. Michael's given you a very easy way to find good ones. If you want to do all of his back work on other groups, feel free. I'm sure he wouldn't be bothered if you take his criteria and apply it to some other organization. But you can find him at lepantoinstitute.org. Michael, what parting shots do you have about charity, about tithing, about anything we discussed today, or anything you want to add?
Well, one thing that I would recommend people is that, you know, as a small organization, we can only do so much, and we can only be aware of so many organizations. But if there's an organization out there that somebody would really like to know about, whether they're safe to give to or not, please shoot us an email at lepantoinstitute@gmail.com. That's Lepanto Institute@gmail.com.
Okay.
Just send us an email. Let us know what organization you'd like us to look into, and we will make sure to put it on the docket.
Boy, that is that's a beautiful offer to do that much work and to help someone that directly, Michael. I really appreciate it. Listen, I'm going to get you back on my show, and I also am going to get you a link to the full interview, so you can pass that along to everybody in the Lepanto Institute.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and then let's just build the crusade together, and thank you for the great work you do over there. I really, really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the work that you do. I mean, it's important for us to talk about money. Let's face it, St. Matthew is the
patron
saint of finance.
Yes, he is. You know, maybe they need to take him on a little more personally. I love St. Joseph so much, but I guess maybe I should look at St. Matthew, the tax collector, and say, hey, dude, give me some insight into these money-minded people, right?
You bet.
All right, Michael. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself and God bless.
Take care and God bless you too.
Well, that is Michael Hitchburn, and what a joy to talk to somebody. You see something, you will notice a characteristic about all the Crusaders, okay? And that is they don't come across as organizational men and with all of these strata of bureaucracies underneath them that you have to go through to talk to them. You know, you want to talk to the Crusade Channel, you can call Mike Church or email Mike Church directly. You want to talk to the Fiscal Fitness Company, you can call David Simpson or email me directly. And then Michael Hitchburn just offered, just offered you to put him to work for nothing. I'm sure he wouldn't mind, by the way, if you donate. There's a donate button on the LepontoInstitute.org. But he said, look, you're uncertain about an organization. You don't know if you want to give to them, and you want to send me an email, LepontoInstitute@gmail.com. He goes, I will research the organization and give you a report, put you on a list of things they're trying to get to, and send you a little report on whether or not you can give to them in good conscience or not. That is an incredible offer. So I would suggest that it's not in payment. But I would suggest that while you're at the LepontoInstitute.org website, like I said, there's a hyperlink at the very far right that says donate. Come on, guys. We all need money to keep our organizations running. If you, if the spirit has moved you in appreciation for Michael's fine work, then maybe click on that button as well. Besides the charity reports button, click on the donate button and give Lepanto a hand. By the way, I told him I would talk about something. I'll tell you what, Michael, I hope you're still listening. So here's my solve. So I have this thing called the financial report card, and every year I do a financial report card for my clients. And it, of course, discusses all the things they need to be discussing to make sure their finances are in good order. And I've always had at the very bottom making a difference, but I never was satisfied with what I put in that category. I talked about morally responsible investing. Anyway, it doesn't matter what I used to have there. I never was satisfied because I didn't think the solves I was offering in the making a difference, which is basically charity, I didn't think they were really solving the problem. And by the way, no one ever really took me up on it either. So I've decided that I'm spending the rest of this year, from now until December, I'm not taking clients. The ones that I'm already working with, I'm going to finish up those cases, but I'm not taking any new clients. And I'm going to create what's called a donor-advised fund. Now, what a donor-advised fund is, in short, is you can give today to the donor-advised fund and get your charitable contribution deduction on your taxes, and then, but you don't have to worry about who you're giving it to. The donor-advised fund will do that work for you. We will pick the charities, unless you instruct us to give it to someone specific, but otherwise, we will pick the charities on who we give the money to, and we don't give the money directly. What we do is we build the fund up, and we start giving the surplus. We start giving the income off of the fund. So the corpus can continue to build for the donor advised fund itself, and you can continue to give to it and get your charitable deductions, which is wonderful. And then the donor advised fund will start selecting specific entities that we know are good charities to give the money to. We might even give it to the Lepanto Institute if he's a 501c3, so I might just have to talk to Michael about that. But anyway, that's in the works. That will be done before the end of the year. And if you're looking to make a charitable contribution, I will have that fund set up for you. I will have it receiving money, and I will be the person sitting on the Donor Advised Fund board making sure it does the right thing. How does that sound? Pretty darn cool, I think. Guess what? The king dude just walked in here. He thinks he can just walk in 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Let me tell you something, church. You got to work harder than that, buddy. 844-527-8723 is how you call in. You know, I've been wanting to do this. Somebody sent me a suggestion. I'm sorry, I don't remember now who sent it to me. But they said, Dave, this should be a song for the True Money Show. So let me play a little bit of this. They say you can't judge a book by looking at the cover, it's what's inside that really matters. Daddy never was a Cadillac kind. He said some things just glitter and shine. Taught us that love was the one thing money couldn't buy. Daddy never was. Woo-hoo! Get your boots on, boys. Well, that is a group called Confederate Railroad. Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. And one of our fine listeners said, Dave, That should be a True Money Show song. So Jacob Wonderboy, I'm telling you to go ahead and find that somewhere. If you need me to buy it, I'll buy it. And we will make that part of the mix, part and parcel of the things that we play on our rejoins and intros and all that kind of good stuff. Okay. So I had somebody text me during the middle of the show here. They said, oh, the correction's here. The drop of 3% today. Usually corrections, you know, like 5% type of thing you're aiming for. Sometimes 15%. And then when it starts dropping below 20, they start saying recession, all that kind of good.
Why you're accusing me of slacking.
Yeah. I don't act like you've been doing any work. I know you're slacking. So Mike has a new thing.
Isn't that nice?
Right, it's beautiful. By the way, do you have any more of those oval VRN stickers and that stuff?
A few.
My wife's looking for a new one. She says hers is peeling off now.
I'm making Crusade Channel stickers now.
Okay. So I have all this stuff that you go to the Founders Trading Post and find and buy. This particular one Mike just handed me is the new, it's kind of a handbill that we hand out. King size, Truth from Radio Size Speakers. It has all of our pictures. I wish mine were blotted out because you really don't want to see my ugly mug. But hey, it is what it is. So we have Reconquest, the True Money Show, the Mike Church Show, the Barrett Brief, the Reverse Deception. But here's the kicker. All you free streamers still looking for some free radio broadcast, you go to thecrusadechannel.com/join, our membership page, and you type the code, quote, unquote, Crusader. Type Crusader in, and you will get free 30-day membership to continue to listen to the Crusade Channel. Now, if you do that, guys, I hope before the month is over with, you say, you know what? I will start kicking in the $8 a month or whatever it is to support the Crusade. We are not commercial radio. We're member-supported. We need your funds to continue the broadcast. Mike just traveled somewhere to do the Argument of the Month Club. I think he went to Minnesota. That costs money, by the way, and it has to come out of the operation, and we got to pay people like Jacob the Wonder Boy, and we got to pay our news director, Stacy, who's doing such a fine job. So, you know, come on. There are bills to be paid, equipment to be maintained, trips to be had, all that good stuff. Open up your purse strings a little bit and give alms to the Crusade Channel. My whole topic today, my question of the day, how do you tell a good charity from a bad one? Well, now I got a simple answer. Go to LepontoInstitute.org and look them up. But if you don't find them there, Michael says you can even email him, and he'll look into them for you. What a deal. So that's my answer to the financial question of the day. I'll give my own answer, too, later on in the show. Before I do, let's get to these few other things I told you I'd cover. Here's a quick one. I love this. You know how they have the National Day of Everything? National Dream, a Little Dream of Me Day, National Wear a Tie Day, National, I don't know, Flush Your Toilet Day. There's all these national days of something or another going on. I thought this was so funny. It's World Financial Planning Day. What was the day? Let's see. October 9th, is that it? No, it must have been before that. October 3rd. So this is put on by this group called the Financial Standards Planning Board. They promote a day called the World Financial Planning Day. By the way, it's sandwiched between two other days, National Name Your Car Day. I'm telling you, this is getting idiotic, guys. National Name Your Car Day is October 2nd, and October 4th, it's National Cinnamon Roll Day. I think this would be a National David Simpson Day. That would be October. No. Well, I'm not going to tell you what day that would be. But right between National Name Your Car Day and National Cinnamon Roll Day is World Financial Planning Day. Woo-hoo! So this is an article by Margarita Chang, who's the CFP, by the way. You're going to love this. So it's on Kiplinger.com. I'm going to make this very short. She says, most of us need financial plans to have the peace of mind to enjoy our lives. Okay, maybe. But listen to this. So she says, while you'll see articles throughout the month that make helpful suggestions on how to handle the holidays, start saving a savings plan and consolidating debt, don't let them distract you from the big picture. That's what this month is really all about. Come on, really? I have a hard time believing that Financial Planning Day somehow or another inspires anyone to do a whole lot of anything. Now, if, by the way, listen to her advice. Surprise, surprise. She says, my advice to you following this World Financial Planning Day, just one thing. Reach out to a certified financial planner, professional in your community. Well, no, I don't think that's really good advice, Ms. Chang. Don't think it's bad advice necessarily, but here's the problem. I've known CFPs who quit being CFPs because they said they felt like they've been propagandized into a certain way of thinking about finances that usually is detrimental to clients' health, their financial health. So I won't endorse carte blanche a CFP or take away their endorsement. I will just tell you, tread carefully with anyone's advice. However, here's my second point. If you want a good financial plan, literally, it could be almost anything you come up with that you discipline yourself to follow and to follow through on. If you stick with just about any plan you can come up with, it'll probably work. So you might say, Dave, that's kind of an oversimplification, isn't it? I mean, I don't know anything about taxes. I don't know anything. I don't really know that you need to. See you later, Mike Church. Mike is Church's. So he comes in. Hey, like that. I'm going to drop in for 3 minutes and still take the paycheck home. I mean, this guy's abusing the system here. See you later, Church. I love you, brother. Sister. You know Mike works hard. I think he needs to take more time off, actually. All right. He can't do that, though, because he feels like he's always holding the world up, keeping the Crusade Channel alive. All right. Seriously, you create almost any plan. Nothing that a financial planner does is so difficult that the average person of average intellect can't handle it. Now, if you think you need a little bit of help, there's lots of books out there. Here's a book for you. I'm not just trying to hawk books, but you want my book on financial planning? A guy called in last week. He says, Dave, I hate to tell you, but your book's just common sense. I went, I know. There's nothing new in financial planning that I could possibly come up with. It better be common sense, but it better be good common sense. And I said, I think it's organized well, and I think it's arranged in a way that makes sense. And I said, all I was trying to do was to emphasize how simple it is, give you some good resources to follow, and then tell you, stick with it. That was really the principal point of my book. So you want my book? It's in the Founders Trading Post, Financial Sanity and Three Easy Lessons. But again, none of the issues of financial planning is beyond your intellect. It may be beyond your time. You may not want to commit the time to it. It may be beyond your personality. Maybe you get nervous when the market's down or something like that, and you'll start selling at bad time. Okay, if you think you have any of those problems, then maybe hire an advisor. And if you want to consider my financial firm, by all means, I would love to have you. Not until next year, by the way, though. I'm not taking clients until January of 2019. But anyway, you can find me at physicalfitnesscompany.com. I hope you had a nice World Financial Planning Day, though, October 3rd. I hope you had a better National Cinnamon Roll Day on October 4th. Okay. Let's see. I got about a quarter of an hour left, and I have more than I want to do. Well, it is what it is. 844-527-8723 is how you call in. You can email me as sweet and lovely Sandy did earlier. Let me go back to my email. I apparently lost it by hitting some random button on my computer. And I'm telling you guys, this is the new computer, the one that's supposed to be working. I think there's some kind of like, I don't know, evil sprite in here that makes my computer not work when I want it to. Maybe it's Mike Church's. No, I know. Mike actually had the studio blessed. So we should have all of the evil energy out of here. Let me see what this says. I got another. Oh. All right. So King Dude, I hope you sign back on and listen. He says, Bradley wrote in and said, tell King Dude, he should be home in bed since he has to start so early, especially with his 115 prayer regimen. Bradley apparently has been listening to you, Mike, and knows your schedule. That's kind of terrifying. Thank you, Bradley, for the email. I appreciate it. I'm glad to know somebody's listening out there and heard me say that Mike Church has popped in after his trip, apparently up to Minnesota, to do the Argument of the Month Club. Okay. So I've said on this show before that you should consider taking Social Security as soon as you can. And I'm a dummy, okay? I do this a very simple way. I said, okay, how much would somebody get from age 62 to 67 from Social Security, in other words, from the earliest time to take to your full retirement age. And then I said, now how long would it take from 67 to whatever age before you catch up with the money you didn't take from the first 5 years? Does that make sense? In other words, if you don't take the first 5 years, you know, you're now behind the eight ball at 67 when you take, and so you got to try to catch up all those dollars you missed. Well, I ran the numbers. It's a simple math equation, and it came out to be like 78, 79. You know, it was pushing the 80-year range, okay? So like another 12 or 13 years before you even break even. Now, anything could happen in those 13 years. And when you're talking about ages 67 to 80, you know what could happen. It's called death. And so the whole financial institution, it seems like, all the financial media, all the experts are saying, wait, 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 postpone. You get so much more at 67. Oh, and if you wait till age 70, you get the most you could get. Oh, you should wait. Don't take early. And the one lone voice, Mr. Stupid David Simpson, is saying, well, I don't know about that. I'm kind of looking at the numbers, and I'm thinking take early. Now, I have other reasons for saying take early besides the catch-up provision, like will Social Security be there in 10 or 12 or 15 or 25 years? Well, you can go look up a few Congressional Budget Office reports, and they're going to say it doesn't look all that good. And then there's the whole idea of laws changing. You know, it used to be the full retirement age was 65. Now it's 67. Why? Because actuarially, it's not working. And so the government's changing the rules to many people's detriment. They thought they were going to get 65, and now they don't. I'm in that basket. I won't get till 67 my full retirement if I take it. I don't know. I've taught a show about whether we should even take Social Security. Again, I'm opposed to Marxism, and this is just a giant transfer tax, and it was foisted upon us by the very socialistic-minded FDR. So it's really a bad program. It should end. But all that being said, Mr. Chris Heerlein, an investment advisor representative, has chimed in on the subject. I'm so glad that he did. This is what he said. Well, this is the title. Why rich people may want to take Social Security at 62. I'm going to expand it. Why anyone may want to take Social Security at age 62. Besides the argument I already made, which is, it's going to take you a long time to catch up if you wait till 67 or 70, and you may not have that many years left in you. Okay. I was really glad to see someone coming in on my side. Delaying Social Security, he says, to full retirement age or later could cost you tens of thousands of dollars, maybe even more, in unnecessary taxes if you live on your retirement savings while you wait. Well, wouldn't you necessarily be living on your retirement savings while you wait? So therefore, whether you're rich or not rich, if your plan is to live on your 401k or your IRA pending Social Security taking later, you just increase your tax liability and therefore are probably going to be losing money. He gives a very specific example, which I'll get to in a minute. But a little bit of background, Mr. Heerlein, he is an investment advisor representative. He does work for a firm, and he says this: my firm reviews hundreds of portfolios each year. It's frustrating to watch people who save diligently all their lives find themselves at retirement in a position that I call the, quote, government plan, close quote. How and where they saved money through the years now dictates how much money they'll pay in income taxes, possibly unnecessarily. All this is true, guys. Now, this is the one thing that's not true in this paragraph. He says they, the investors, are in this position because they didn't think about how and when they would pull money out of these accounts in retirement. That's baloney. They're in that position, Mr. Heerlein, because of our terrible job, the financial advisory arena's terrible job in telling people how to structure their finances for maximum efficiency, including taxation. They're in that position because of our bad advice and because of the government incentives to put money in taxable accounts later, known as IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, simples, SEPs, KEO plans, on down the line. The government incentivized us putting money there. People bought it. They bit into the apple. They took the bait. They put a bunch of money in there. And now they're getting waylaid in taxes in retirement. And it's because we gave bad advice and the government tempted us to do it. Let's be honest. Okay. But let's go through his example proving that taking early may just be the answer. Give me a little warning, too, will you, Jacob? So, he says, these days, too many people in the news and the financial advice world stress taking Social Security at full retirement age to get their full benefit amount. And the fact that by waiting even longer to file, the benefit can grow 8% a year from full retirement age to age 70. Based on my Social Security expertise, this one-size-fits-all advice may not be appropriate. Let's look at his example. He says, if you were to go ahead and take Social Security age 60, I'm sorry, the issue is, if you don't take it 62, you're going to be compelled, very likely, to pull from your IRA and 401k in retirement. Those are all taxable withdrawals. Okay? Because you're going to be withdrawing and paying taxes on it, he calculated how much you are likely to be paying on those withdrawals. Okay? Then he said, but what if you took a 62 and reduced those withdrawals by the amount you took out in Social Security? Guess what his answer was? He says, if this family were to delay Social Security payments from age 62 to 66, meaning they didn't take Social Security and they lived off of their 401ks, IRAs, etc., then they'd be paying a projected $51,372 in taxes. What if you did it the other way, the way he says, take early and would reduce your IRA and 401k withdrawals? In that case, you're going to be paying roughly $9,768 in taxes. What is that? That's a tax savings of $41,604. And you say, oh, so what? That's just a little bit of money in retirement. I got millions. No. If you take early at age 65, you'll have $122,000 more in your saving in your retirement accounts. At age 75, you'll have $144,000 more than if you would have taken at 66. And at age 85, you'll have $100,000 more than if you'd taken at age 66. This will be a perennial problem, because when you cost yourself early out of your retirement accounts, you lose the growth, you lose the compounding, and all of a sudden, you lose a whole bunch of money. Here's the bottom line. You got to analyze all the factors that go into a decision, not just the obvious ones, but the ones that aren't so obvious, the unintended consequences. And Mr. Heerlein did this very well in this article. If you want to know the title again, it's Why Rich People May Want to Take Social Security at Age 62. Okay. And here's my own analysis of Social Security before I quit the True Money Show for today. I believe Social Security must end. It's an evil enterprise. It's a transfer tax. It shouldn't be. It's not good for America. Because I don't think it's going to happen just by me saying it, I think we should take early because of all the economic factors involved. So if you're going to take early. Finally, my son's advice. He thinks we should all get in these government programs to bankrupt them. He says, let's bankrupt welfareism by everybody getting on it. I've always thought that was kind of funny and nonsensical and a joke. But you know what? In this context, maybe it applies. If you can qualify for Social Security, jump on board, bankrupt the system, then maybe they have to do something about it. It'll be painful, but heck, what other solution do we have? I don't know. Are we done for the day, Jacob the Wonder Boy? I think we're about done. Cue the music. I am David Simpson. You are listening to The True Money Show. I'll be here today and every day from 3 to 5 o'clock. You guys got to start calling in. I give you the number, I give you the email address, and you do nothing with it. You're aggravating me. I'm done with this. I got some guests coming up in the coming weeks. You might want to hear them, like you heard Michael Hitchborn today. Come back again, listen to some king-size truth from radio-size speakers.
I was a young one. I don't remember ever going hungry. Daddy made sure we didn't do without. I went to school with some of these fellas. They had money and I was jealous. I didn't know then what I know now. Daddy'd say you can't judge a book by looking at the cover. It's what's inside that really matters. Daddy never was a Cadillac kind. He said some things just glitter and shine.